EMTs helping combat vets, marrying a paramedic, colleges prep for active shooters, and we'll look at the newly reported sepsis criteria in a special segment with EMS educator Kevin Colopy. If that's what you're looking for, you found it right here on this week's episode of The Medic Cast.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters!
This is The Medicast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the pod medic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Medic Cast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to take this opportunity to say hey and welcome you to this week's show. We've got a great show for you in this week's episode. We'll be looking at one article I found on what it takes to be the spouse of an EMS provider. Then in this week's special tips segment interview, recorded in the physio control booth at EMS Today 2016, I chat with educator Kevin Colopy about the newly released sepsis assessment guidelines reported in the Journal of the American Medical Association recently. What do they mean for EMS assessment of sepsis? We'll find out about that later on in the show after the news. Before we get to all that, though, I do want to make sure that you're doing a couple of things. You need to check out the links and additional information I make available for you over at the MedicCast blog. That's at mediccast.com/blog. You'll find a show notes link at the top of the page. You can click that and it'll find the most recent episode, and you can scroll down and find other episodes in the past. There's also a search box in the upper right-hand corner. If you're looking for something in particular, enter the keywords there. But I want you to take some time and make sure you follow up on the information you get on the show each week so you understand how it applies to your own EMS practice and protocols. If you want to get back in touch with me, make sure you do so. So maybe you have a question even after looking around on the site. Well, email me at podmedic@mac.com. I want to get your questions, your comments on an episode, maybe a suggestion or an idea for a future episode. Either way, I do get back to you. Whether we use it in the show or not, I will re-email you back. So keep those emails coming in. I love getting them. That's it for our contact info. Let's go ahead and get on into the rest of the show with our news segments coming right up in just a sec. First up in this week's EMS news, let's take a look at a proposed EMS bill in Montana aimed at enabling EMS providers to give specific non-transport services to veterans. I found this article over at EMSone.com where the author says that EMS is no longer defined by the word pre-hospital because we are shifting to providing a full range of healthcare services for our patients. This Montana law is an indication of that change. Our recently returned veterans are dealing with many recognized medical and mental health issues, including things like PTSD and problems like increased suicide rates. EMS providers like EMTs and paramedics are often the only medical professionals these at-risk veterans see. We see them on the streets, homeless sometimes, and struggling with their demons. The challenge is that we are not trained to handle these types of crisis situations. That's going to change in Montana with the passage of this bill. It will allow EMS to provide and refer these patients to additional services without having to take them to the hospital first. Now, as Art, the author over at EMS One, says in his article, he guardedly supports the bill because the devil is always in the details. How this and other initiatives like it are implemented and defined all have an impact on their effectiveness, but I think it points to just one of the many ways that initiatives like community paramedic or mobile integrated health programs are impacting patient care around the country. I'll be coming out with some special interviews on this topic recorded at EMS Today recently. They will be coming out in the future here on the MedicCast, so you want to stay tuned for future episodes in the next few weeks and months. And check out Art's other columns at EMSone.com. I'll have a link in the show notes for this episode over at EMSone.com or at MedicCast.com/blog. Next up in the news for EMTs and paramedics is a look at a fun article I found over at UniformStories.com written by Michael Morse. It's entitled, Things You Need to Know When You Marry a Medic. First off, that's a great topic for an article and maybe even a social support group on Facebook. Michael lists seven things you need to know if you're going to marry a paramedic or EMT, and for the most part, I think he's spot on. From looking at the emotional changes that we all deal with in EMS to the challenges of being married to someone on shift work schedules, period, well, it takes a supportive approach to the problems that are being faced by many spouses of EMS providers. Now, I know that I've covered this in the past here on the show. One of my favorite episodes was one in which I had my wife and the wife of another of my podcasting buds, Rick Rosati, on the show to talk about what it's like being married to us EMS providers. Rick and I pretty much remained in the background on the call while the wives collectively threw us both under the bus for the audience. Overall, though, I think it was a great look at the challenges faced by our spouses. I'll try and find a link, and I'll post it in the episode show notes for this episode if you want to go back and check out that episode. It's from way, way back before I did video segments on the show, but you should check it out. In the meantime, if you're newly married, about to get married, or have been married for a long time, I still think you might want to share this link with your significant other, and then use it to talk about the things you both might need to deal with. Could be a great conversation starter, and maybe some cheap therapy in lieu of actual marriage counseling. Check it out and let me know what you think. I look forward to hearing from you. Finally, in our EMS news this week, I take a look at an alarming article I saw in the USAtoday.com site about college and university preparedness for things like active shooter situations. A recent survey says that many of the colleges surveyed said they had never even done a drill or even a tabletop exercise to prepare themselves for what would happen if an attacker with a gun came on campus. Now, to be fair, this lack of preparedness probably extends to many active shooter soft targets out there, things like shopping malls, office buildings, and other places with little to no security or limitations to access. Well, they're all at increased risk from an active shooter situation. All of these locations, though, they need to train their staff on what to do in case an attacker comes into their building or onto their campus. Mostly, this will be shelter in place, lock the access doors, stay where you are hidden. That seems to be simple, but if you don't educate and train people, you can't expect them to think of these things in times of stress. These locations should also reach out to local police, EMS, and fire departments to see what accommodations can be made to help them prepare for the arrival or for the responders to come on the scene. Is there a possibility to work up a pre-plan like fire departments do for fires in big buildings in their districts? I think that this type of cross-training is imperative to have successful responses and hopefully save more lives. We'll be talking about this type of thing over at the Disaster Podcast soon. We do it a lot, actually. And we have our expert sponsors from the Paragon Medical Education Group there, where we talk about what kind of training they could do for active shooter drills. They actually conducted one at EMS Today recently, and we'll have a review of that drill coming up in a future episode of the Disaster Podcast. It's actually coming out this coming week, so you might want to check it out. In the meantime, keep looking for those topics here on the Medic Cast, too. Sepsis and septic shock is one of the things we are supposed to be trained to recognize in EMS, but there's never been an EMS-accessible set of approved assessments that could be used in the pre-hospital setting. A recent research article on sepsis in the Journal of the American Medical Association, or JAMA, talks about redefining the criteria for alerting when a patient has suspected sepsis. Now, formally, we've had talks here about the SIRS criteria, which stands for Systemic Inflammatory Response Syndrome, but that's been replaced by the SOFA assessment. That stands for Systemic Organ Failure Assessment. The good news for EMS is they actually defined a quick SOFA assessment that could be used by us in EMS. So at EMS Today in Baltimore, while shooting interviews in the physio control booth, I chatted with EMS educator Kevin Colopy about the new sepsis guidelines and what they might mean for EMS and critical care transport. Check it out. Hi, Jamie Davis here from Innovations in Patient Care and the Medic Cast, and we're here at the Physio Control booth at EMS Today 2016, kicking off our interviews here with Kevin Colopy, and I'm really excited to have Kevin on. Thanks for coming on the show again.
I'm happy to be back. It's always a wonderful experience.
So we've scrambled because we changed our topic at the last minute because new sepsis guidelines just came out, and we both kind of said, hey, we need to jump on this.
Yeah, it's incredible because sepsis kills more people than trauma, heart attacks, and strokes, and yet it's always just kind of in that back burner that we've all known has been a problem, and it's started to gain traction. And now we have some really solid evidence on how to diagnose sepsis consistently amongst all the healthcare systems in the country. It just means big changes from what we've always currently known sepsis to be and how we've diagnosed and talked about sepsis. Some of the names have even changed.
Now, this is going to affect critical care, obviously, in the ICU and even in the emergency department. But you even said yourself that you're not quite sure how this is going to be adopted and adapted to in the ER.
Sure. So these papers that were released in JAMA this last week and came from the recommendations from the Society of Critical Care Medicine in conjunction with one of the European medical societies. So you had a international multidisciplinary group that came together with these guidelines. But it's important to say all of the physicians that were working on this came from the ICU. So these are all board-certified, fellowship-trained critical care physicians. They are our intensivists. And what they said is service criteria is good for diagnosing our body's generic inflammatory response to any disease process. However, it's not really specific to sepsis, so we end up with a lot of misdiagnoses and overdiagnoses of sepsis. And they said there's some better criteria that are really based and defined around organ dysfunction, and that's really the real problem in sepsis, is it causes the different organs in our bodies to systematically begin to malfunction. And so that's really where they derived these changes from.
So the new criteria they've come out with is the SOFA criteria, S-O-F-A. And why don't we run down what the SOFA criteria are?
Sure. Well, SOFA is Sequential Organ Failure Assessment. And so you now have a SOFA score. And what they have said is you need to make the assumption that everyone, when healthy, has a score of zero. And now what they're going to do is walk through several of our different critical systems and look for evidence of dysfunction. So they look at our pulmonary system or our respiratory system, and what they're actually looking at is the ratio between our PaO2, or the dissolved oxygen in our bloodstream, and our FiO2, or our inhaled oxygen. When we are healthy, we should have a PaO2 to FiO2 ratio of about 400. So what they say is on room air, if you divide the two together, you should have a ratio of about 400 if I'm on room air. And if my lungs are not working properly, when I divide or when I multiply my oxygen levels that I'm breathing in times the dissolved oxygen in my bloodstream, if that ratio starts to shrink, I am not perfusing or not absorbing the oxygen from my alveoli into my bloodstream properly. So the lower that number becomes, the sicker our patients actually are. And so zero would be healthy lungs. Four would be patients who have evidence of basically ARDS, so super unhealthy lungs. Then what they look at is our coagulation times and our coagulation factors. And specifically, they're going to look at our platelets for looking for evidence of coagulation dysfunction. Our normal platelets should be at least 150, and when they start to drop below 150, they add value on the SOFA score. The third organ they look at, which is really new for us in sepsis, is the liver, and they're looking for an elevated bilirubin. Okay. So if your bilirubin's elevated, your liver is stressed. Next we look at the cardiovascular system, and they look at our blood pressure. And instead of looking at systolic blood pressure, what really matters to us is our mean arterial pressure. A lot of places in emergency medicine that started to become more and more commonplace to discuss, and now they're really hitting it home saying, systolic doesn't matter, it's all about your mean arterial pressure. If your mean arterial pressure is at least 70, you get a score of zero on the SOFA score. And once you drop below 70, 70 being the first marker, 65 being the next marker, or needing to add vasoactive drugs. So if you need to add vasoactive drugs, and the one they specified in this was dopamine, which asked some questions because levofed really has been the vasopressor of choice.
But for they said patients,
right,
yep.
In low-dose dopamine, you'd get a score of 2. If you need to go to moderate to high levels of dopamine, more than 5 to 10 mics per kilo, you end up with your score of 2 or 3. Or if you do have to add, because your patient's already too sick, norepinephrine, you already jump to a SOFA score of 3. Then we're going to look at our central nervous system, so brain function, and they just use a GCS. A normal GCS of 15, it's 0. Anything less, you're going to start to add score. And then our kidney function, and they look at creatinine. Elevated creatinine is going to give you a score. So what they say is any score greater than 2 on the SOFA assessment, your SOFA score, your patient has sepsis, provided we know they have an infection.
Right. So it's with the suspected or known infection. with this score, we can then assess that. Right. Now, we're at an EMS conference. We're not going to be doing a lot of labs necessarily. Some people are lucky enough, maybe in the helicopter transport business or critical care, they might have some kind of iStat device to check some of our labs.
Right.
But there is a quick sofa that can be used in the EMS setting.
Yes, so, and this is pretty awesome. They came out with QSOFA, or quick sofa, what you just said, and they said if your patient has a suspected or known infection and then has two of the three, elevated respirations greater than 22, altered mentation of any point from their baseline, or a systolic blood pressure of less than 100, two of those three plus suspected or known infection, that should be your sepsis alert. Those patients need to be screened with SOFA. They are at high risk for having sepsis. It's not a guarantee, but that is completely objective criteria that when they looked at the evidence said it's very consistently there. So now, as we've looked across the country, we've tried to say, well, how do we have a sepsis alert? We now have it evidence-based from the Society of Critical Care Medicine with QSOFA.
And that's important because like so many of the other alerts we have, stroke alert, STEMI alerts, and things like that, we can now maybe start putting sepsis alerts in place from starting in the pre-hospital sector.
Right.
And so that people are ready to apply the full SOFA criteria as soon as they get to the ER.
Right.
And the ER physicians and nurses are expecting that suspected sepsis patient, and we can start looking at being a little more aggressive with our fluid resuscitation and maybe thinking about what we need to do with this patient in the field a little bit more proactively.
Right, and so there are a lot of programs that are doing great sepsis alerts. Greenville, South Carolina has a sepsis alert program. Ryan Mayfield out in Denver has had sepsis alerts for several years with his healthcare system. I believe he's with Centura Health out in Denver. And they've been really doing some awesome things. I know Wilmington, Delaware has a sepsis alert program. So we don't want to take away from what anyone has done, but what this is doing is it's set the standard of this is a sepsis alert, this is what it needs to be, and we now need to screen these patients. What's different now is we used to look for evidence of severe sepsis to start treating it. Well, they're taking away the definition of severe sepsis. It no longer exists.
It's no longer there.
Right.
Don't say somebody has severe sepsis. They don't.
Right. And the reason they took it away is they said it undermines sepsis. It makes us start saying made-up phrases like simple sepsis or normal sepsis to make it think like it's okay. No, it's not okay.
They're either septic or they're not septic.
Right. This is a life-threatening problem if you have sepsis. So sepsis is bad. So they just took away that phrase. So now we have to say, well, how do we know when to treat it in the field? And what we do know to treat is if we have septic shock, which we can diagnose in the field, so you have a positive QSOFA, and now you look for evidence of septic shock, that needs to be treated in the field not only with fluids, but also with pre-hospital antibiotics. And that has 2 points you're looking for. Once you have QSOFA, if you have a mean arterial pressure less than 65, you are in septic shock, or if you can test a lactate, a serum lactate greater than 2, you diagnose them with severe sepsis. And that 2 is
important. Well, but not severe sepsis.
Sorry, septic shock, right. And I got to get used to that myself.
That's how new this is, folks. This literally came out days ago, and you're already having to rewrite whole presentations you're doing because of this.
Absolutely. Because what we were treating and when we initiated care at my program, where we've been treating sepsis for several years very successfully, our diagnostic criteria of our inclusion criteria for it is no longer valid. And so we have to update our protocols because of this science. So if you've got septic shock, elevated lactate greater than 2, or a mean arterial pressure of less than 65, you have septic shock, you need to treat them. And what I wanted to say about lactate is we used to use a lactate of 4. We had a much higher threshold. So while people might say, well, whoa, we liked treating severe sepsis. Okay, take that phrase away. But your lactate has now dropped in half. So you have a much higher sensitivity for catching these patients, which really means, wow, measuring lactates in pre-hospital care really now has a lot of emphasis and a lot of need, because between those two, we can very accurately diagnose these patients.
Excellent. Kevin, is there someplace people can find out more information about this, either from you or online?
Sure. Well, if you go to the Journal of American Medical Association, or JAMA, all of these articles are available for free right now in their current issue in online formats. You can't download the PDFs unless you have a paid subscription, but these articles are so important, they've made them free available for anyone to review online. I'm assuming once this gets posted, you'll be able to post the PDFs I sent you. I was able to get copies of them, and we'll put them up. And if anyone has questions, they can email me at kevin.colopy, that's C-O-L-L-O-P-Y, at nhrmc.org, and I will email you copies of these, because I think it's that important to get these out.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you, and thank you so much for being available to do that. Kevin, thanks for coming on. It's always great to have you here on the show and find out what's new and exciting, and this time it's even newer and more exciting than usual.
You can't even have presentations on this yet. It literally came out the same week we're talking about it.
Absolutely. All right, folks. Well, that's it for me. Remember to thank Physio-Control for having us here in their booth for EMS Today 2016. And we'll have more from the MedicCast and Innovations in Patient Care coming up soon. So keep checking back. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. I want to thank all of you for checking out the show this week, and of course, remind you to follow up on all of the information you get in this week's show over at the MedicCast blog. That's at mediccast.com/blog. Over there, you'll find a show notes link at the top of the page. Go ahead and take a moment and follow up on all of the information and links to news items and more you find there each week. You can also sign up for our email newsletter that'll bring you those links directly into your email inbox each week if you want. There's a form on the right-hand side of the page. Just go ahead and fill that out, and you can get the MedicCast newsletter for yourself. I also welcome your comments and suggestions by email. So if you want to get back in touch with me, shoot me an email to podmedic@mac.com. Send in your ideas for news links, ideas for future show topics or interviews, whatever comments you might have. I really do look forward to hearing from you, and I'll make sure I get back to you. I work hard to respond back to every email that comes in, so please keep those emails coming. If you want to catch up with me on social media and some of the pages and sites out there, you can find me at most places under the handle Podmedic. So you can catch me over at Twitter at twitter.com/podmedic or Facebook at facebook.com/podmedic. Friend or follow me over there. Also, don't forget to check out our MedicCast Facebook page. We now have over 5,000 followers, so head over to facebook.com/medicCast. Click the like button on the top of the page and join the community over there. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. Please make sure you spread the word and share the MedicCast with your colleagues and students and friends in the EMS world. I'll be back here each week with new episodes, new interviews, news items, tips, and more every Monday morning to start off your EMS week. Tell somebody else about the MedicCast today. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. It's time to close out the show. Don't forget to thank our sponsors. And remember, folks, Scene Safety, BSI.